everyone, and welcome to another episode of Slow Conversations with Fields and Ferns. We are your hosts, Alicia and Ancilla, and together we run the sustainable fashion brand Fields and Ferns here in London. In an attempt to spread environmental positivity and in a way find out more about how people can practice sustainable living, we invite inspiring individuals from all over the world to talk to us who implement sustainability into their businesses to leverage change and make a positive impact on the environment. This week, we are very excited to introduce Ella Schoen, the founder of Top Up Truck. Top Up Truck is a refill shop on wheels in the form of an old electric milk float from 2000 that travels around London, providing a plastic-free, convenient, and affordable grocery shopping experience. You can book or find out where they will be next by visiting their website, topuptruck.com. Ella Schoen, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We're super, super excited to hear about Top Up Truck and how it works. I was just wondering if you could give us an overview of how Top Up Truck works and where the idea came from, where you're based. Just overall intro would be great.
Cool. So yes, thank you very much for inviting me on. It's my absolute pleasure. I am based in Clapton. I live by the River Lee, and Top Up Truck is based in Hackney. I'm partnered with Restore in Hackney Down Studios, which is a sort of regular bricks and mortar zero waste shop. And so basically the idea is that residents can book me to go or book the truck to go to their street. So they'll kind of round up their neighbors, decide on a time that works for them, and they book for their allocated day. So each postcode, like E5 is Friday, E8 is Saturday, E9 is Sunday. So they book within their allocated day. And then the top up truck arrives loaded up with everything from pasta to lentils to rice to cleaning products, bathroom products, dried fruit and nuts, things like that. And essentially everyone on the street brings their containers outside of their house, so they don't have to kind of lug them all the way to the zero waste shop, which might be a bit less convenient. And then they kind of fill up their containers, but on the street.
I think it's such a brilliant idea. I'm always very conscious about plastic waste, and I really do try to go to a refill store when I can, but it is such a pain in the butt to make it there. So I think it's a brilliant idea that you come right to people's doorstep. I'm wondering what the journey was for you in starting this business. How did you think to really start a refill store on wheels, especially?
It's not because I've always been a massive plastic-free person. On the contrary, I'd been asking myself why, even though I have every intention of living that way, why I wasn't doing it. And kind of when I was commuting around London, I'd sort of get home and the co-op was like right by my house. So I'd end up buying stuff from there with a huge amount of unnecessary packaging. And it was, you know, it was only really when I made the effort to slog all the way up the road to refill my bathroom stuff. It was something that I kind of struggled with doing myself. And so I assumed if I'm somebody that has that intention but doesn't find it easy, then there must be a better way of doing it.
Right.
And I'd also been working in sustainability for a company called Rubies in the Rubble, who make condiments from surplus produce that would otherwise go to waste. Mm-hmm. And we've been getting a lot of requests for packing into returnables. So packing into, rather than sort of, you know, packaging that's used once, stuff that can be then sent back up the supply chain to be refilled and then sent back to the site. That's a really complex thing to do in a B2B context, like a business to business context, but it had got me thinking about ways of kind of doing that in a B2C or a consumer context. And so I'd had a few ideas kind of whirring around my mind. And then when I was put on furlough, I started doing some volunteering for an organization called Made in Hackney, delivering emergency meals to people around the area on a bike. And it just really made me want to be more ingrained in my local community. And so kind of these ideas just sort of came together and Top Up Truck was born.
Wow. You said you worked for a sustainable brand beforehand, but was sustainability always something you strived for? Was it always part of your life, or like, is this something you became conscious of later on?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a vegetarian since I was six. And I guess that was just because I like the cute, fluffy animals in the first place, or I was trying to be a difficult little brat or something. But then kind of over time, as I sort of said, you know, do I still want to be a vegetarian or not? This is still when I was a pre-teenager. I remember my mum explaining to me that it's more efficient to eat directly from the land than to kind of waste energy up the food chain, you know, by feeding soy to cattle and then to eating it. You're losing a lot of resource up that food chain. And that was a concept that I remember sort of attaching myself to from quite an early age. And so I'd always had that sort of notion of just making conscious choices and having the environment in mind my whole life. This kind of really came to a head when I started working for Rubies in the Rubble and sort of being more immersed in the world of sustainability, food waste.
I think it's interesting, just people's journey towards sustainability. I always think about our own, and I think it has a lot to do with the way you were raised. But some people come towards sustainability much later on in life. And I think it's so admirable that you've made it your mission with your brand to make this such a priority. Do you still have your old job, or is this your main?
So I'm leaving my old job at the end of this month, and I'm going to be doing Top Up Truck full time. I mean, currently it's 3 days, and I hope to add another, it depends what, probably another 2 days to that.
Wow, so exciting.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That must mean business is going well.
Yeah. I mean, we're operating at almost full capacity on those 3 days, and requests keep coming from all over the place. And obviously people want kind of more than one slot option. So yeah, there's definitely the demand is there to sort of to increase the delivery days and hours.
Amazing. So good. I'm so happy for you.
You mainly offer organic products, but as we know, sometimes organic products are obviously sometimes it's a bit more expensive. How do you make it accessible for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of our prices are actually pretty competitive relative, particularly to some of the kind of supermarket chains. Some of the products are actually cheaper, such as the spices, for example. I mean, you aren't paying for all that packaging for such a small amount of product. And actually, a lot of the feedback that we're getting is that the prices are way too cheap when, you know, they see the total and they go, oh, really? But yeah, it's, you know, not everything's organic, and it's not an absolute value of the business. But obviously, organic farming has a lot of benefits in terms of soil health, biodiversity, stops kind of water getting contaminated. So it's obviously an important factor in tackling climate change. But I think everything is always a balance. Making something cheap is obviously going to affect the well-being either of the planet or of growers and producers, so that I think there's always going to be some degree of compromise, and it's about finding a balance and kind of prioritizing what the needs are. I think also people can actually afford to buy organic food if they understand how to cook from whole foods, because buying processed foods is really, really expensive. Whereas if you can batch cook like lots of rice and dal, then you can make amazing nutritionally balanced meals for under £1.
I'm curious, are you also trying to make organic, healthy and sustainable products more accessible to the general
public? Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of accessibility is obviously a word that I use a lot in my kind of marketing comms. And a lot of that is that, you know, it's more accessible by just being easier to get to. But in terms of the broader question of accessibility and kind of affordability, my personal view is I've still got some work to do to review some lines and maybe incorporate a few cheaper lines. But my priority before I start doing that would be to better communicate the value of kind of learning to cook from scratch, but in batches. Because I think once people understand that, and kind of if I can start, once I find the time to start sharing recipes and ideas, that a lot more people will be able to get behind it, whereas they might have thought it might be a sort of premium service, and it's not necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you could summarize the values that you're trying to convey, what would it be?
I'd say the core values are sustainability, nutrition, and community. And I think that those things should all be kind of intrinsically linked, but I guess through the modern age, we've kind of lost that link in some way. And I guess that's from a sort of rise in internet shopping, home deliveries, people ordering ridiculous amounts of takeaway. You know, people are kind of opting for convenience, and that's been a sort of growing trend. And people are eating less. You know, the whole process of shopping is a lot more faceless. You don't even see somebody when you go to the supermarket and scan your own items and leave. It's just the whole process is is kind of bereft of that kind of community interaction. So I guess I'm trying to kind of bring that back. I mean, it's such a community focused thing. When I'm kind of going around and the milk float evokes a lot of nostalgia, people sort of shout at me from the street like, oh my God, I've not seen one of those in years. It really brings the community together. There's been a sharp rise in the number of neighborly WhatsApp groups and things like, I mean, I don't know if Nextdoor has been around for years or not, but I've only heard about it in the last few months, the app. And I guess there's been a lot of kind of neighbours sending messages of support and whatnot throughout the lockdown period. But it's actually really nice when the neighbours all come out on the street or kind of in the estate car park and actually all meet, you know, obviously in a socially distanced way, of course, but they all sort of meet up and they have a little chat. And it's just quite nice whilst I'm sort of frantically filling their containers, listening and seeing that they're not in a hurry. Just because they're there and they're catching up.
I think it's nice, especially in this time of COVID when everyone is keeping more to themselves. And in some ways, a sense of community has been lost in that people can't see each other. I also feel that people have become closer in any sort of community event. Even refilling your containers at Pop-Up Truck kind of gives them a way to connect and catch up. And sure. I find that really nice. It's kind of like the nostalgia when you see an ice cream truck, or I used to live in a neighborhood where people would deliver bread on a bike. And it's just sweet idea. I think the nostalgia element really helps bring customer excitement.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like a bit of a crazy vehicle, and I could have used a more, and sometimes asked myself, gosh, why didn't I use a much more fit for purpose, nice new compact electric vehicle? But I've only been going for 2 months and it's gained quite a lot of traction. And I think that's just because of the sort of novelty, fun. You know, I didn't mention fun as one of the values, but I think fun definitely is part of it as well. The amount of times I've arrived and people have said, this is the most exciting thing that's happened all month. And I'm like, buying your pasta. But yeah, it's a real novelty.
Nice.
Yeah. So do you feel that the community is growing now? Do you think that consumers' attitudes towards sustainability are shifting?
I think consumer habits are changing rapidly and permanently, for sure. I think since kind of 2017, that Blue Planet documentary about the plastics problem, well, that featured a little segment on the plastics problem, really created a seismic shift in how people use plastics in their lives. And people started kind of, in the UK particularly, started rejecting plastic straws and plastic bottles pretty rapidly. And I think that the plastics problem is very tangible. It's very visible. People start buying reusable bottles, and it's weird how it almost becomes a bit of a status symbol that, and oh, look at me with my reusable bottle and my keep cup, and well, people really get behind it. But then I think that it was kind of important for people to attach themselves to the plastics issue first. And I think that has helped people start to get their heads a bit more around the concept of climate change and global heating and the kind of urgency around that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think it's a fad. It's definitely, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. Like we are in a climate emergency.
Right. I want to go back to something you said, which is that in some ways, sustainability has become this sort of status symbol. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more accessible to those that come from a higher social class and who have also been educated and had the opportunity to be educated on the importance of sustainability. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if you have any ideas on how we as a society can make healthy and sustainable food more accessible to a wider population.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to not shame people and to bring people gently into the concept. Not everyone can afford to buy organic food. Not everyone can afford to buy a chili bottle, you know. I think in terms of making healthy, sustainable food more accessible, I think we've got a cultural problem in this country, and which is where I think people have quite limited cooking skills and sort of understanding of home economics, and they go into the supermarket or kind of out and they're sort of overwhelmed with processed food. If you look at, say, the carbon footprint of somebody in India compared to that of the UK, it's very low, and the people eat a lot of whole foods. I think people just kind of need to learn basic cooking skills and how to cook from low cost, basic, healthy, sustainable ingredients like grains and pulses. Whether you're vegetarian or kind of vegan, or you're a meat eater, you know, just to learning how to incorporate those things into your diet, how to plan your weekly meals. I think there's a big education piece that needs to be done there. I think there needs to be better compulsory food education in schools. I think there needs to be a lot more media attention on the matter. There needs to be more community cooking classes. And I think, you know, I think on the positive side, there's a lot of opportunity for people to kind of innovate in this area.
I totally agree. And going off of that, how did you carry sustainability into your everyday life?
Yeah, I don't eat meat or fish. I do eat a bit of cheese and a bit of eggs. But yeah, I eat a lot of whole foods. I also, this year, I haven't bought any clothes at all. Not one garment apart from 3 face masks. And I mean, part of that is just because I've just realized I have a lot of clothes already. And also we're kind of just got used to not really caring that much about what I'm wearing because of being in lockdown. And then I sort of got so far into the year that I was like, oh, I can just go to the end of the year with like this. But yeah, I mean, I think also, yeah, I think just kind of, I've always shopped in charity shops. Well, kind of since I was a teenager, I've shopped in secondhand shops as well, as much as possible when I do buy clothes. And when I am going to buy new clothes, I make sure it's stuff that I really, really love or I'm going to wear a lot. And I've made the switch to kind of, my whole flat is run off green energy. I cycle wherever possible because it's obviously good exercise. And good for the environment.
So good. I wonder what sort of challenges you faced when building this sustainable business.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of challenges. I mean, it's been really, really fast. I haven't even really had time to stop and look back and think about any of it because it went from a nothing to a thing in 3 months, you know. Say that again, sorry.
It's such a fast time to grow.
Yeah. Just in terms of the conception of it, it was 3 months from having the idea to it launching. And then I launched it 2 months ago. And there's challenges all along the way. I mean, I guess the thing about doing things sustainably and in a sort of circular model is that there's a lot more work and a lot more thinking required than simply just like whacking out a product in packaging and sending it out and not caring about where it ends up. And so there's a lot of manual work at the moment in terms of loading and unloading the float, in terms of filling up the float, filling up all of my containers to then go out. And so there's a lot of streamlining that needs to be done. And I'm currently working on a crowdfunder in order to make the float kind of more fit for purpose, which is taking up a huge amount of time on top of the already like absolutely enormous workload. So it's kind of working all hours at the moment. You know, hopefully that's going to die down soon. It's just right now is a particular kind of go, go, go period of
time. Yeah, you're in that startup phase.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just sort of finding a balance between getting everything done and also taking a little breather is actually just a massive challenge in itself.
Right. I think especially you're the founder, but is there anyone that's kind of doing it with you?
Recently built a small team of helpers. There's somebody who might potentially come on board to take up a second float, who's currently helping on everything at the moment. There's somebody else who's recently come on board doing some volunteering. And I've had a few friends sort of come in and out and help with bits, and my partner helps out. But yeah, I am not doing everything by myself. Like I've got a lot of amazing people who have either come into my life to support me or who I've known for years and are sort of helping out.
That's so good. You have a little community to help you.
Yeah, otherwise I would, wouldn't be able to do it.
So, so nice. Well, I think that is it for our questions. But I just want to say, I think the idea is so lovely, so wonderful. And I can definitely relate to the nostalgia element of it. And Scylla and I haven't come and visited you guys, but we live in Hackney, right by Victoria Park.
Oh,
and
wow.
We have seen you like drive by and we would love to come and top up our containers.
Great. Yeah, we'll get yourselves booked in.
Yeah, we will.
Today for Victoria Parks.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for meeting with us. And yeah, we will talk to you soon.
Awesome. It's been really lovely speaking to you both.
I hope you have a good day. And I don't know if you're heading to be in the top-up truck today, but I hope you have a lovely day. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much.